Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Yes, Nancy, that was really easy and wonderful for me. You are a very easy person to engage with. You asked great questions and helped guide me, and you also allowed me to go in my own direction in terms of how I answered. I don't know if I got the exact answer to your questions, but you allowed me to go in a direction which I felt would be of interest to your listeners as it relates to my story.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. Interesting conversation with the amazing Hondo. These last two conversations that we've had, you're getting some really great foundational pieces of how to build a craft out of your livelihood and a path, your own unique path, and being aware of what's out there, but also filling in the gaps that you really need to be inventive. You need to take big risks in areas that you're very uncomfortable about, but also like Hondo has done, or what we now know as John McHugh. Am I reinventing your last name? It's John Hughes.
Hughes. That's why I just go by Hondo.
Yeah. Anyways, okay. I'm a little punchy with our conversation today, which has been fun. This third conversation is really about the longer that you're in your career, the more you realize that there are different phases that we go through, and it could be in decades, it could be in five-year increments, it could be in three-year increments, where we're moving along, we're going along in our craft, we're really building out our career in our venture, whether it be as a solopreneur, whether it be as a CEO and a president, whether you're an artist. However you're shaping your life work through business ownership, so widen your definition of business ownership is really about developing yourself as a business owner, but also you can't not work your craft and keep evolving as our society evolves and as people's appetites change. And so this conversation is really about staying on top of your craft. Both my mother-in-law and my father-in-law, professional musicians, violinists, and my husband grew up in a family that really worked on perfecting their craft and the amount of hours that it takes. Matthew's dad, Lee Foley, was concertmaster for the Minnesota Orchestra for over 25 years. And Helen Foley, his mom, has been performing up until her early 80s. She's not performing now in her late middle 80s, but she is still practicing every day because her craft, to her, has been her saving grace throughout her life. It has been something she can count on every time she goes through anything challenging or happy or whatever. Her violin has been her companion. Matthew's dad had a different experience. Once he reached the level that he had reached, he just realized, I want the monkey off my back. And so he's done a lot of different things since then. And so I think that when you own your own business, and you develop your livelihood through a craft that you've crafted and developed a special expertise in, it changes throughout your life. And so, Hondo, we left off in our second conversation with difficulties that you were having in your 40s, just trying to rebound from, in 5 years, five of your closest people, both parents dying and your brother dying by suicide, had brought you to a place where you've done very well throughout your life, asking yourself tough questions. you took a look at your life and said at that point, what am I doing? What's my purpose? What's my path? Where's the joy in life? How can I take charge of the direction of my life, assert self-leadership from this point forward, and change up what I'm doing? So what happened to you as you were moving along, working through that, taking some time to grieve, and also started laying a different path in your 50s?
Well, thanks again for having me, Nancy. These have been wonderful podcast experiences for me. I realized that the part one of my journey into full-time hondohood, doing magic and speaking, it was motivated by the challenge. In other words, it was a personal challenge. I wanted to see if I could pull it off. When you learn magic, you want to go, can I pull off this card trick? And to me, going into business for myself was a giant card trick. I want to see if I can pull it off. It's a magic trick. Make it happen. And so it took a while for me to do it. But that was my original motivation, was it was about me. It's my personal challenge. Can I make a living at it? Can I be good enough? Will people want me? Will I get repeat bookings and all that? Will I make enough money? It was about me. And then when losing three family members in a 5-year period and sitting back and shifting one's perspective from being that of a human doing to a more of a human being, through reflection, I realized, okay, I've answered the part one questions. Yes, I can do it. I can. I've made it. I'm good enough. I can do it. Audiences like me. I'm getting repeat bookings. I'm making enough money. So part one has been taken care of. So do I want to continue with that same motivation? And I said, no, I don't think so. I'm going to try for part two. So my part two motivation was to focus less on me and more on my client, their audience, the purpose of the event. So I've come to realize that my whole life as a, you know, one-man band, performing speaker, magician, mentalist, entertainer, auctioneer, whatever the event calls for, it's all about the people. It's about the people who are in the audience. Well, if that's the case, you need to learn more about those people before you stand before them. So that's a big step. I created a pre-event questionnaire I use for every performance, and I take names. I get the names of 8 to 12 people in the audience who are important to the sponsor of the event. Tell me a little bit about them. Give me their interests. Give me some quirky things. Give me some tidbits. The garage door fell on the car or whatever it is. People don't know that I know what I know when I get on that stage, but I do my homework. So I come equipped with a whole lot of stuff that I can pick and choose while I'm doing it. So in redefining my purpose as a performer, as a presenter, I said, let's focus 100% on the people who are in that audience. I don't need to focus on me anymore because I know I'm good enough. I know I'm going to get the applause. It isn't about the applause for me. It's about the applause for the audience and the fact that the sponsor of the event is happy that their audience is happy. And so my job is to, in the end, if I think about what's my purpose, is to make the event planner happy. Because if the event planner is happy, the sponsor of the function, if they're happy, then I'm happy. And if they're happy, their audience is happy. So we need more of that today in this world. There's a lot of anger, fear, frustration. There's a lot of divided audiences of philosophies of how the world should be run. And I'm not getting into any of that because my performances do not care what people's politics are. My performances care about the human condition and the fact that there's nothing more important than whoever's in that audience while I'm on that stage.
Yeah. How did your life change as we approached COVID?
I had a performance in Los Angeles in late February of 2020 for someone I mentioned in the previous podcast, Mike Gillespie, who used to hire me for the Nabisco Dinosaur Golf Tournament. He was now with UL, and they were doing an international customer event at an international rugby tournament. I'd never performed at a rugby tournament. So I thought, hey, this is cool. So he brought me out to LA and we did it and it went great. And I flew home on March 2nd. And 2 weeks later, the world shut down. And whatever bookings I had in the calendar were canceled. And I was out of work. And I only have had one corporate gig in the last 19 months. And that was a year ago in South Dakota for an agricultural meeting in Pierre, where COVID hadn't hit them at that point. And so they went ahead with their function. So one event. And I haven't had any come back. So you asked me, has it affected my business? Yeah, it has. Basically, it shut it down from a paying gig standpoint.
Yeah. What were all the gigs that you were doing before COVID? Like, what were the main events that you were performing at this point?
I say I serve five primary markets. One is the corporate events, meetings and events market. Another is the nonprofit sector, where they would have a gala or a fundraiser where I could be their live auctioneer and their talent. Another is sporting events like golf tournaments. I've done things for NBA teams on the magic of team building and teamwork. So I'm fairly big in the world of sports, not only professional sports, but college and high school sports as well. The educational market. I do educational conferences where I speak to teachers. I visit classrooms. I do school fundraisers, lock-ins, senior parties, and so on. And the fourth market would be private or personal events, which I've been getting a bunch of lately, where people just say, hey, we're going to have a party. So they have their friends over and hire me, and I come and do my thing. And it's a similar performance, but instead of it being sponsored by a company, it's a person who wants to entertain their family or their friends, and they bring me in. So there's this whole variety of events. During normal times, I might have a trade show on Tuesday. I might have a national sales meeting on Thursday. I might have a private house party on a Saturday night. It's such an undefined and almost unpredictable type of a life. People say to me, what's your busy season? Well, for holiday parties, it's December and January. For corporate meetings and conferences, it's typically the spring or the fall. For family functions, it might be summertime. There's different events happening at different times of the year, and I take on every request and seek to put a deal together where it'll work for the client and it'll work for me, assuming I'm a good fit for their function and their audience. That's a big thing I really focus on, is if I'm right for the event, we'll work it out. If I'm not the right person, then I can recommend someone else who might be more suitable to that audience.
Yeah.
That's a long answer to your question.
I think setting up that you had five different profit centers that you were working from that presented itself as a pretty good livelihood. And then COVID came along, you had your last event. And then what happened to all the profit centers?
They dried up until I did a little reinventing.
And tell me about how you have taken the time during COVID to really carve out this new part three. Are you in part three of your life?
I would say I am. I would say, and I don't know if there'll be a part four. I hope part three lasts a while.
Okay, good.
So what happened to me and anybody who is a gig worker, event performer, whether you play guitar and sing or do magic or do caricatures or juggle or whatever it is, your work is gone. How about the people who were working in the hospitality industry and the meetings aren't happening? And now all of a sudden you've got vacancies in hotel rooms and you've got restaurants that aren't busy and all of that trickle down. So what happened? I belong to a number of groups, networking business breakfast groups, and they went to Zoom for their meetings. And so I thought, what can I do on that topic? So I researched Zoom and I invested several thousand dollars in cameras, green screens, and the lighting and sound equipment and switchers. So I can now do a multi-camera Zoom presentation, and I have done some. I decided last year on New Year's Eve that I would invite anybody I knew in my database of emails and friends that I was going to do three non-intersecting, non-overlapping magic performances for New Year's Eve, and everybody's welcome to come on for free. If you want to make an in-kind tip for me, fine, but it's not required. So I did that. That went over quite well. I had a few technological hiccups with Zoom where I learned that how to iron those out. So now I've done a few corporate things for Zoom. I've done some personal parties on Zoom. I've had teachers ask me to visit their classrooms on Zoom, which has been big during this last year and a half. And furthermore, I now have a greater understanding of this Zoom technology where I am thinking about cataloging and videotaping everything I know in the world of magic and maybe everything I know in the world of speaking and marketing and all that, and then putting that into small pieces, which could be put together in some sort of offering online where I can, before part four hits, I can share what I know somehow through this new technology. And I don't even have to leave my house to do it. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. That is. I'm wondering if you could also pick a rising star who you want to take on and mentor.
I could certainly do that. I have to say, though, you're not the first person to suggest that. I have friends who have suggested that, and they said, can you create a Hondo clone? And I said, I cannot. It's not possible. I could mentor somebody, but I couldn't create another one of me to fill in. It'd have to be someone who I could help them identify their best approach for whatever it is they're best at doing. I know where my gifts lie, and I can't teach my gifts to somebody else. I can teach them how to do the mechanical aspects of magic, but I can't teach somebody how I do that because I don't even know how I do it. It's just a gift. When you have a gift, you just let it happen. And Johnny Carson, who I grew up on, he had a gift. He was so good with the audience, and he could tease people without offending them, and he could have fun. And that's me.
They still have the Tonight Show, but yeah, no one is like Johnny Carson.
Well, and I'll tell you why. What I learned from Johnny was it wasn't about Johnny. It was about the guest, and it was about the audience. Johnny would get his laughs when the audience was happy and when the guests were funny. And Johnny gave the guests room to express themselves. Now, my biggest beef with all of the followers of Johnny Carson is they almost all have made it about themselves in terms of getting laughs for themselves. Johnny got laughs, but the laughs weren't for him. The laughs were for the audience, and there's a difference. And so some of these guys try too hard to get laughs for themselves, and I just feel it's a little disingenuous. And I still watch some of them and like them, but depending on who the guests are. But I think some of them try too hard to be funny. And if you have to try to be funny, it doesn't work as well. So yeah. I'm being critical, but that's my job in terms of being fair and honest when I evaluate people. But I don't think you're right. I agree with you. There was nobody like Johnny Carson, you know, and he had his demons in his private life. And I've been learning more about those. And some of that's a little disheartening, but I'm evaluating him on his craft and how he did his job and what it meant to me to learn from him.
Yeah. And you're gathering information to carve out this as you're laying out part three. A lot of the reinventing oneself at the next part is to gather lots of information like what worked there, what didn't work there, the challenges of replicating oneself in its uniqueness. Oprah Winfrey didn't continue the Oprah Winfrey Show because it was with her. So she closed that down, but she used her Harpo production company and still uses that today to help her with her launching her first female and Black woman to own a TV station. Anyway, she's carved out different ways in which she can pass on a legacy, but it certainly is not without her being the center of the legacy.
And one of the things I think I see in my part three future here in terms of post-COVID, when live events come back, there's going to be a pent-up thirst and hunger for real live events, engagement and entertainment. And I'm here for that. And if any of your listeners are in a position to engage me for something, or if they know the person in their organization who does the planning for these kind of events, I see myself now as much as an event consultant as I do a professional speaker entertainer filling a slot. In other words, I've done this so long and for so many kinds of events that I know what works, what doesn't work. I like helping my clients. I like to consult and help craft and create the event that we're going to put on for the audience. That way, we know it's going to be unique. We know it's going to be something that's made specifically for them. So I truly enjoy the collaborative process of sitting down, whether it's with one person or an event committee, to knock around some ideas. And that all can occur now over Zoom calls in advance, just exploring these possibilities. So I do look forward to the day when we can get back doing real fun, entertaining events with the magic, with a message.
So are you resurrecting your five profit centers and to look differently to reflect where we're at today? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, they're all waiting. They're all waiting for, I think there's a hesitation to host a company-sponsored event right now because of the optics. It just might feel like it's a little too soon. But personal events, personal gatherings, people who aren't booking me for a company event, but they bring me to their backyard to do something for some of their key people who they're hosting on a personal basis. So it's not really a corporate event, even though it's a corporate audience and a corporate guy hiring me or a woman hiring me, but they're reframing the nature of their event. But I'm still available for and believing that all of my primary profit centers will come back. And like I say, I'm available for all of them right now on Zoom if they're doing that sort of thing. But when it comes to back to live events, I'm ready. And not only am I ready, I've actually expanded my repertoire of what I do in my presentations quite a lot, because during COVID, I've gone into a magical study mode where I'm learning new material, new ways of presenting some of my past material, and learning new material. Yeah, that's been keeping me going. I'm a lifelong learner. I like learning new magic. I love to be fooled. I love to be entertained. Sometimes I don't even want to know the secret. The only reason I'd want to know the secret is if I'm going to do it in my own show. But if it's something that doesn't fit my style or I'm not going to do it, I don't even need to know how it's done because I'm like the average person. I like to be amazed too.
That's great. So it sounds like part of part three is you've continued to reinvent your craft by adding some different ways in which you're doing magic. And you've also engaged technology in how you're doing your different corporate events or positioning yourself to do these different events. We thought that the length of COVID wasn't going to continue, but with the Delta variant, we were all, I think, COVID fatigue. And so the desire to get back into being entertained. And we had that wonderful event at Dan DeMuth's that I co-led, was a wonderful way to get back into networking. It was outside. It was you out there performing magic for us. And you also did a private show within the event, which was very engaging for several people who came back to me afterward and said, oh my gosh, I had just had a private session with Hondo and this was just fantastic. So I think that your spontaneity of seeing how you can be useful in different circumstances also reminds me of your story about Muhammad Ali, about how you created an event with Harvey McKay to make his signing of his book event be so much more fun with Muhammad Ali there and also with you performing and then performing privately for Muhammad Ali. Would you like to share any other of the stories that were impressionable with movie stars that you've met along the path, like Robert Wagner and Joe DiMaggio?
Yeah, let me think.
And James Garner. Wow, these are just people are just...
My father's favorite TV show was The Rockford Files. So when he found out that I performed for James Garner, he loved James Garner. And so that was, it was always cool that you could go tell your parents that you met one of the people that they really enjoyed too. And the other show, do you remember a show when we were young? May still be on. I don't watch daytime TV, but Let's Make a Deal with Monty Hall.
Oh yeah, I remember that. I think they've got a, yeah, I think they've got a different host, but yeah, I think it's still a show that's still on. People like making money and playing games.
Monty Hall was at one of the Dinah Shore golf tournaments, actually more than one. But I remember meeting him and he was watching me do my magic and we were just sitting around a table doing close-up magic. You see, I do two distinctly different kinds of presentations. One is on stage in front of larger audiences. That's the magic with a message, material that can be enjoyed by several hundred people at one time. But the close-up, which is how I got my start, and which is what I did the other day at Dan DeMuth's after the main show, was where just you get a small gathering, just gathered around. You can do very intimate, up-close, personal sleight of hand. And that's how I got my start. And so nowadays, when I do live events, usually I get booked for a combination of the two, where I can do the sleight of hand close-up is the teasers, and that can either be before or after the main show. And it works nice as a two-format performance. So back to Monty Hall. We're doing close-up magic, and he asked me a little bit about my life, and I told him I was a former math teacher and that I used to do probability in the classroom. And I said, I think we used your show one time, Let's Make a Deal, because in Let's Make a Deal, you have three curtains. And I said to Monty, you would often have the guest choose, say they chose curtain number one, and you didn't open curtain number one, but you showed that curtain number three would not have been the grand prize. So now you would ask the guest, do they want to stick with door number one or do they want to go with number two? And so we had this conversation and I showed him the math as to what the viewer should always do. And a lot of times the person would stick with their first choice because they figured, well, I picked curtain number one. They showed me curtain number three is not it. So at this point, I got one chance out of two. It's either one or two, and I'll stick with one. But that's not right. What is right is you should always switch. You should switch to number two, because now you do have one chance in two. But the person who thought they had one chance in two, by not changing their mind, they only had one chance in three, because there were three of them there at the time. And they picked one of them. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
So I showed him the math. I showed him the actual algebra. So he was fascinated by that. And it's just something I remember when I got to meet a famous guy who hosted the TV show.
Yeah, and it's a good way for the audience, too, to think about the circumstances that we're in and the options that we have. And yeah, if anyone plays a game show, figuring out the math is an important one in your odds.
Now, here's another one for you. I think I sent you a photo of me performing for Robert Wagner and the famous New York Yankee baseball player, Joe DiMaggio.
Yeah.
So I, being a baseball guy, I played grade school, high school, college ball, and I knew I have a couple of very good friends, Paul Molitor and Dave Winfield, who I played ball with and are in the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. So they were both in the heart of their careers at the time that I met Joe DiMaggio in the early 90s. And I got through doing magic for him. And I was very nervous because this was Joe DiMaggio and he was famous. And I had been told that Joe DiMaggio isn't the warmest human being and he might not take to you very well. He took to me quite well. He liked the magic. In fact, he asked me if I could do more. And I said, yes, but I have a question for you about a couple baseball players. I said, I come from Minnesota, St. Paul. I said, two of my former teammates are in Major League Baseball. One is Dave Winfield and the other is Paul Molitor. Would you mind if I ask your opinion on those guys? And he says, yeah, no problem. He says, that Winfield, he said, I think he's the most gifted, athletic, talented baseball player in the game. And I thought, well, that's cool because he was the shortstop and I was the third baseman when we played for Addicks Brooks American Legion Baseball in St. Paul. We went to the state, we won the state championship when I was 16 and he was 17. And I thought, oh, this is really cool. So I said, how about Paul Molitor? He goes, Paul Molitor. He said, Winfield might be the most talented guy, but that Molitor, he says, he is, in my opinion, the most fundamentally sound player in Major League Baseball. And that was music to my ears because we played for a coach, Billy Peterson, who stressed the fundamentals like nobody else. And you didn't play unless you really knew the fundamentals. And so hearing Joe DiMaggio tell me that, and I relayed that story to both Paul and Dave, and they enjoyed hearing that. And it helped me think about that word fundamentals. And I, sometimes when I'm doing my presentations, I'll have a whiteboard or a flip chart up there and I'll write out the word fundamentals and I'll put the first three letters in caps, F-U-N, then a hyphen, then a D-A, and then a hyphen, and then mentals. And I said, fundamentals, F-U-N is the most important part of the word. If you're not having fun at what you're doing, find something else to do because you won't be inspired if it's not enjoyable. And then the last part, mentals, I said, you have to put your mind to it. You have to really think deeply. You have to explore. You have to ask a lot of questions about what you're doing, why you're doing it, who you're doing it for, how you can make it better, all that sort of thing. And I said, if you're not having fun, and you're not putting your mind to it, then the two letters in the middle come into play. And those are, duh, why are you doing this? So I get out of the audience, but I'm a big believer in the fundamentals of whatever it is you do.
Yeah. And you seem to be coming back to that and figuring out how to carve out a new space for part three.
Yes, yes, yes. Arnold Palmer, I told you in a previous segment about how I hired myself to perform at his tournament in Florida. I just walked in and did it. I needed to put it on my resume. That's why one of the coolest things I've ever done is hired myself for an event. No one knew that I wasn't hired for the event. I just went in and did it. So years and years later, I'm performing at the 3M Championship here in Blaine at the TPC course. And it would so happen that Arnold Palmer is there. And the tournament director had me performing at his private reception at his backyard swimming pool next to the golf course. And Arnold was there. And I got to sit down with Arnold and do my magic sponge ball trick, the one where I carried a couple spongy balls with me. And I put one in my hand visibly, put one in his hand visibly, passed the magic wand back and forth. I open my hand, my ball's gone. He opens his hand and he's got two. So Arnold's got this really huge hand, and I do the trick for Arnold, and he opens his hand, and when he sees the two balls there, he just looks at me, and he says, do that again. And I just thought that was, these are stories that I will never forget, just how people react.
Yeah. I hope you also write a book. You've got the most amazing stories that would be really wonderful for anyone to read and good for upcoming magicians.
I was in Orlando working a charity hospital event in Orlando with the famous golfer Payne Stewart, who passed away in a terrible plane accident in 99, I think it was. And he was with Bob Hope. So he introduces me to Bob Hope, and I get to do that same trick for Bob Hope. And Bob Hope is this famous comedian, very wealthy man. He's wearing a golf glove that's all beat up, cracked, and has holes in it. And I thought, you'd think Bob Hope could afford a brand new golf glove. And so I do the ball trick. And when he opens his hand and he sees the two balls, he just looks at me and he goes, oh my God. He says, that's amazing. He says, I should bring you on the road with me. We could pick up expenses. I don't know what he meant, but everybody laughed who was standing around.
It is funny. I can't describe exactly why.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those weird jokes that seem to leave you laughing. This has just been a pleasure. Is there anything else that we left out about part three? Because you're not alone in regrouping from COVID, but also the longer you're in your profession, how to keep vital and excited about what you're doing. Is there anything else that you want to make sure that we cover today?
Yes, I would like to add something that we didn't discuss and it just hit me here. Being an solopreneur all these years, I've been a one-man band. I'm the talent, I'm the consultant, I'm the booker, I negotiate the deals. There's one thing that if I could turn the clock back that I would have done is I would have found somehow a salesperson, a marketer, a manager, a booker, somebody who believes in me and what I do and sees the potential for a joint winning profit center where they could help get the work, take a fair percentage, and then relieve me of that duty. I haven't found that person, and I am still open to that, but it would have to be someone who, you know, gets what I do, understands what I do, believes in it, sees the marketplace for it. I believe there's a huge marketplace for it. And if I could improve one of my skills, it would be that of marketer and booker. Because as I told you early on, I never got into any of that stuff in school, never took a class on it. Everything I've learned is from trial and error and flying by the seat of my pants. That would be part of part three that would be very interesting if someone listening to this saw a way to maybe partner with me. And then all I'd have to worry about is being amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure that person is out there.
Sure. So that's just food for thought. But and if not, I'm good with doing what I do. It's just been a great ride. And it's been an honor to spend time with you and sharing my story with your audience over these last three sessions.
Yeah, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time and sharing. You've given a lot of gems that are worth pondering in business ownership. Now, you never get away from the fundamentals. You have to figure out how to do those things and find quality people to help you execute.
You did mention earlier on, and I don't know if there's time for this. If not, we won't do it. But if there is, you mentioned, is there something magical?
Yes.
Do you have time or should we?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. Yeah. So what magical trick do you have for us as we go off the air from our conversation today?
This reminds me of something I used to say when I used to tell people, yeah, I was a guest on the CCO with Boone and Erickson many years ago. I did magic on the radio. You should have seen it. Ba-dum-bump. And they said, what trick did you do? I said, I just did a mind reading trick. I said, I want everybody to think of a number from 1 to 10. And they did. And then I said, okay, I'm sensing your number is 6. 10% of the listeners called in and said it's the best trick they'd ever heard on the radio.
Oh my God, that was the number I picked.
That's right. See, but you get my joke. 10% of the people called in. So, but because I got yours, it was amazing to you, but not to anybody else. But that's not the trick I do. That's just a cool joke. Here's my trick. And all the listeners to the podcast can participate in this. It's a little mathematical magic with a little touch of creativity and choice thrown in. All right, here we go. I'll go slow. Stop me if you think I need to repeat a step. Think of a number from 1 to 10.
It's not going to be 6.
Nope. Just don't say it. Just keep it here.
Okay. Keep it here. Yep.
All right, because there's more to it. You got your number from 1 to 10?
Yes.
Multiply it by 9. Then I tell people, if that's difficult, start over with a smaller number. And they'll get a laugh out of that. All right. Now, if your answer has 2 digits, and most of them will, add those 2 digits together. So 43 would be 7, 56 would be 11. Are we tracking?
Yep, we're tracking.
Now subtract 5. And whatever your number is now, count that many letters into the alphabet. A, B, C, D. A would be 1, B, 2, so on. C, 3, 4, D, 5, C, 5, E, 6, F. I'm doing it. My number is 6, so my letter is F. But get a letter that corresponds to the number that you're on. Can you do that?
Yep, got it.
Now I'm going to have you think of a country that starts with that letter. Don't say it, just think of it. My letter is F. So I'm thinking of Finland. I want you just to think of any country starting with your letter. You got one?
Give me another second here. This is a tough one.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Now, I want you to picture that country written down. You don't have to write it, but imagine you're looking at the word. Go to the last letter. Whatever the last letter is, imagine an animal that starts with that letter. So in my case, Finland ends in a D. So I'm going to picture a donkey because it starts with D. So I want you just to picture an animal starting with the last letter of your country. Do you have it?
Yep.
Now I want you to picture your animal written down. And I want you to look at the last letter of the animal. And I want you to think of a color that starts with the last letter of that animal. So in my case, I was thinking of a donkey ends in a Y. So I'm thinking of the color yellow. So I would have a yellow donkey in Finland for my choices. Now, were you able to come up with a color?
Yes.
So you have a country, an animal, and a color. And so should everybody else listening. Now, why this is, I don't know, but I do this in my live presentations, and it's pretty amazing how it ends, because I tell people I was on a flight flying over Europe, and I had a window seat, and I'm looking out the window. We're flying over Finland, and all of a sudden the plane goes up, makes a turn. We cross over. We're flying over another country, and I'm looking out with these binoculars, and I can see the line separating the countries, and because in real life on the map, those lines are huge, and we're flying smack dab over Denmark. So I'm looking down on Denmark. You don't perchance have Denmark, do you?
Yes.
That's amazing. And I'm looking with my binoculars out the window, and I zoom in, and I can't believe what I see. I see a whole bunch of orange kangaroos jumping around in Denmark.
Okay.
You happen to get an orange kangaroo in Denmark.
Yes.
That's amazing. So now guess what? About 90%+ of the listeners did too on this podcast. And when I do it in a live event, by a show of hands, how many got this? It's amazing. And I tell people the moral to the story is there's a lot of paths, a lot of ways to get to the same place. And that's what I believe is true in culture and teamwork. And when you have your mission and your values, let your people be creative, give them choices. The more choices you allow people to have, the greater ownership they have in their own experience, and the more committed they're going to be to the outcome. So that's an example of how there's many different ways to get to the same ending, the same place. And I think it's just a good example of an audience participation, mathemagical thing that it lends itself to a little moral to the story.
That's excellent. What a wonderful way to end. Thank you so much.
You got it. Now, all you listeners out there, can we tell them my website?
Yeah, go ahead.
It's HondoMagic.com, and it's also on my social media. It's at HondoMagic on all the social media platforms. Feel free to email me if you think you know how that trick works. HondoMagic.com is the website. Thanks again, Nancy. This has been really a blast to share with you and your listeners.
Thank you. The same on this end. And thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, Monfred de Notre-Mère, brother from another mother. And thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Keep doing your magic. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? You can. We know that dual innovation with mentoring works. We've mentored thousands of emerging to experienced entrepreneurial leaders and small business owners in this dual innovation process since 1992. We are here to co-create a mentoring process where you can nourish resilient relationships while you redesign your business. Resilient relationships promote relational literacy, the ability to understand and express healthy ways of relating. Even a slight increase in relational literacy can lead to significant improvement in all of your relationships. So why not take the risk to move out of dysfunctional relating and move into ways to deepen your connection to yourself and others? Assert self-leadership. If you aren't already subscribed to this podcast, go do it now. Go to wementor.com and get the support and skills needed to build a purposeful life journey with your peers on the entrepreneurial leadership path, consciously co-creating our future. You can also join our virtual mentoring community for one-on-one strategic mentoring or participate in a WeMentor lab, because we mentor meaningful conversations and activities that lead to higher levels of functionality and engagement in our world and everything that we do with each other. So engage your curiosity and become the leader you envision yourself to be today. WeMentor.com. Go there. Check it out.